from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. We have so much information for you today, information that empowers, commentaries. I'll be sharing a commentary from Mike Whitney on Oprah, my own comments on Oprah concerning her Me Too statements at the Golden Globes. I wanted to hold off on making my own statements until I saw how things were unfolding. And now I see it, and I'll share my perspective. Also, the idea that Oprah would make a good president. I'm sure many people believe she would, because she is rich with charm, and lots of celebrities that back her. So I'll give you a different perspective. Also today, we'll be sharing the latest on health and healing. I have a guest in the second part of my program, Dr. Ken Berry. There is something going on around the United States. Virtually in every single state, there's some movement behind the scenes politically with lobbyists for the pharmaceutical industry is trying to make it mandatory that your children be vaccinated. Now, if it can be proven through good quality, independent peer-reviewed science with placebo controls, meaning one group of kids take vaccines, one group does not, you follow them for 5 years, that's reasonable. That's the way it should be done. None of that has ever been done. So then how can they with absolute confidence say and certainty vaccines are safe and effective for every child, for every condition? They've been proven wrong at every point. Right now around the world, they're rebelling. They're taking to the streets by the hundreds of thousands, for example, in Italy. Well, the person who brought the lawsuit against the Italian government for mandatory vaccines is our guest today, Dr. Ken Berry. And he'll be telling you about what happened in California, how corrupt the system is there, and why the parents are outraged that even though the majority of the citizens did not want mandatory vaccines, the legislature passed it in any case, and how they're going, remember, this vaccine issue is important for adults as well. You can say, well, I'm 45, my kids no longer are at home, they're in college, I don't care about vaccines. Wrong approach. Because once they have mandatory vaccines for all children, then it's for all adults. That movement is already picking up steam. So imagine what you could be excluded from if, as an adult, you chose not to get vaccinated. Think of the industries that would say every employee must be vaccinated for the protection of the other employees. So colleges, universities, mandatory vaccines, hospitals, mandatory vaccines. Imagine having to go to a hospital and you hadn't had a vaccine, they refused to treat you. So this is the world we're living in. You may not be aware of this, but we are. So we're going to talk about that as well. So also, I'll be sharing some additional thoughts today on everyone left and right in positions of power talking about the uniqueness of and exceptionalism of America and how we bring democracy and peace and freedom around the world as no one else has. Well, I'll share a difference of opinion. The difference is mine is based on historical facts. So that's what we have lined up for you today. Let's begin. We have a very high rate of suicides in the United States. First, we have the vets. About 23 a day are killing themselves. And almost all of them are on antipsychotic medications. Instead of being honest and looking at what do these drugs do, what are their effects and side effects, what do these antidepressants do, effects and side effects, we're simply saying if we're mandating them, they must be good. And that's it. End of story. Nobody goes beyond that. Well, they're not good. None of them are good. No antidepressants are so good. They've never worked. There's no proof they've worked. And the antipsychotics cause hyperagitation. The antidepressives cause depression. It's actually on the label, but nobody ever reads that label. So we have suicide and suicide ideology, ideation, and suicidal thoughts are common as side effects. That's just one group. Then we have another group of people, senior citizens, killing themselves. Why? Well, maybe if we spend time with them and saw their life, their loneliness, the abject poverty many of them are living in that they never thought at this point in their life. They can't go out there and compete with the younger people. And you see them sometimes. You'll see them, for example, bagging groceries in a department store. And they're not having an opportunity to live out their life. Many, some are, but an awful lot are not. About 12 million senior citizens are living at the poverty level. So you decide, what's the point? There's no point. Why do I want to look forward to another year of this? They kill themselves. But then there's another group, according to the University of California, and they're looking at the rate of suicides by drug intoxication in the United States. And it's vastly underreported and misclassified. That's according to a new study co-written by Dr. Mark Kaplan, professor of social welfare at the University of California Luskin School of Public Health. Now, the study was published in PLOS One, a highly respected journal. And the researcher reported that the drug suicide rate in the United States rose nearly one quarter, 24%, in the last 16 years. That's astronomical. And also the accidental opiate and other drug intoxication deaths increased by 312%. This rate gap suggests an increase in suicide undercounting. That's according to the multidisciplinary international team of researchers led by Ian Rocket of West Virginia University School of Public Health. Quote, unfortunately, part of the problem is due to serious under-resourcing of state and local death investigation systems throughout most of the United States. And so they're saying that the CDC is reporting 63,000 drug-related deaths in 2016, up from 52,000 in 2015. Quote, many of these deaths were probably suicides, yet reported as accidental self-poisoning rather than intentional self-harm, particularly among the middle-aged. And researchers report that suicide notes and psychiatric history include a prior suicide attempt, and this is not being dealt with. So what's my take on this? It's threefold. One, we have a problem of understanding our meaning of our life, the purpose of why we're alive by the time we hit middle-aged in our 40s to mid-50s. And that's when a lot of people have gone through transitions, marriage transitions, either in a marriage, but it's lost a lot of its meaning, its passion, its excitement, its creativity, just kind of hanging out in the ritual of relationship rather than the vitalism of a relationship. And as a result, people just, they go through rote. They live by routine and ritual, but it has no meaning. It's like eating a dinner that was beautifully prepared, but then you hold your nose. As a result, you can't taste the food. Well, what's the purpose of not being able to taste the food? That's what it means for a lot of people who think, wow, I'm kind of burned out. And that's the second part. We're overstressed in America. We're overstressed, and as a result, it takes a toll on our health, both physical and emotional health. Until one day, we just don't have desire. We don't have joy. Now, someone may not notice it. We may be completely functional, but we're not happy campers. And then we start looking, okay, my kids are gone, the empty nest syndrome. We may have a loveless relationship or a no relationship. Divorces are common. And then we're wondering, gee whiz, I'm 50 years old. Who's going to be interested in me now? You know, I got the bags, the sags, you know, I got the belly, I got the flat ass, I got the, you know, the receding hairline, I've got the gum disease, I've got constipation, I've got all these conditions. Who's going to want to be in a relationship with me if it's going to be more like a relationship with a home health attendant? Here's your Depends. No. People don't want that. Many people are just embarrassed by bringing what they have become into a new relationship. So then they go through that loneliness and look for ways of distracting themselves. And partly what they do is they go on the internet and they troll and they kind of lose themselves between television reality shows. Well, my life might not be great, but boy, it's a lot better than all those people. Look at them. All they do is yell and scream and bitch at each other and then smack and spit and throw bottles. And this is what people become. This is entertainment. No, it's television depraved. And so people think, what the heck? It's not worth it. I don't want to go through the next part of my life knowing it's all on the downside and I'm sliding out. They kill themselves. And those are people using opiates to do it. So it wasn't as if it was just an unintentional overdose. More often than not, it's an intentional overdose because they know that the opiates will take you to la-la land, get you into a euphoric bliss, and then you die. It's better than putting a gun in your mouth and blowing your brains out. What if you miss and just blow a hole through your cheek? Well, that ain't cool. And they don't want to take something and end up poisoning themselves otherwise and not getting the job done. With opiates, you'll get the job done. Take enough, you're going to die. And why do we have to take all this pain medication to begin with? That's the third point. Because we're living lives that create pain. How about that? Wow. Do I have to have a PhD from Yale, Harvard, and Stanford all to get the idea that maybe we should be honest about what's wrong in a country? Can't do that. To the contrary, there's no profit in telling us why something is wrong. The profit comes from treating it as a chronic, lifelong condition. But why not just have a national program to show you what causes pain? Inflammation. That's easy. I can do it in 5 minutes. I can show you at least 95% of all the causes of disease in under 5 minutes. Okay? Simple. And does it work? You bet. 40,000 people in 42 groups of study groups, about 32,000 people. And it's worked. So why wouldn't it work for the rest of America, at least those who want to overcome pain? If they knew that what they were going to do was going to cause pain and that was going to lead to opiate addiction, wouldn't that be better for the country, for those who said, no, I'm not going to eat the potato chips and the pizza and drink that alcohol if I know my joints are going to swell, my back is going to swell, my pain in my muscles with fibromyalgia, I'm going to put more amyloid plaques down the brain? No, I don't want that. But we're not honest about anything in our country. We can't be. You look at the President of the United States. No, don't look at the President of the United States. That's so unfortunate. It's like watching a 5-year-old boy decide because someone didn't want to play with him, he's going to go over and defecate in his pants and then walk through everyone when they're having lunch. That's our president. Wow, what an embarrassment. I mean, my God, if you got a lobotomy, you'd be smarter than him or his entire family. And what kind of family prides itself in killing elephants or an innocent and completely non-threatening animals in the wild as sport? What kind of sport is that? Only a punk does that. Only a cowardly punk does that. But then again, those apples don't fall far from the tree. Crab apples at that. So we look and we see we're committing suicide. The government is doing nothing to intervene. To the contrary, the pharmaceutical industry controls our governmental agencies, controls the lobbyists, controls the money, and so their interests are always protected. Don't do anything that takes away money from the pharmaceutical industry and its gigantic, gigantic profit machine. So we're not going to correct this. Understand something. Not everybody's going to make it into lifeboat, and we're not in enough pain to change. There have been no mass demonstrations. There's been no general strikes. Nothing. Zero. Until there is, until we can bring America to its standstill, then it forces change because it scares the politicians and it scares the media, the Anderson Coopers and the other mindless people. It scares them. So what are we going to do? Be smart enough not to take the opiates. Be smart enough not to take their pain medication. Be smart enough to prevent the pain to begin with. Be smart enough to realize there's more important reasons to live than there is justifications to die. So that's what I read in that study that wasn't stated, but it was still an important study. Also, there's a stinging nettle activates reusable cancer treatment. This is from the University of Warwick. Researchers develop a new way to attack cancer using a non-toxic dose of a formate, a sodium formate, found in stinging nettles and ants, fire ants, to trigger an organic compound, and it's named JPC-11, and it targets the metabolic process which cancer cells rely upon to survive and multiply. And it does this by converting a key substance used by cancer cells to provide the energy they need for rapid division into a natural lactate, leading to the cell's destruction. So, nice work, stinging nettle extract, nice work, researchers who found a way to use this to kill cancer cells. Also, there was a meta, meaning many study analysis, and it adds even more evidence in a good way to the association between the omega-3 fatty acids and lower heart rate. This is from the Soochow University in Taiwan, and it was published in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And this was a meta-analysis that affirmed that when you take the omega-3 fatty acids, either vegan source or from fish, that decreases the heart rate. And according to the authors of this study, and that an elevated resting heart rate has emerged as a risk factor for cardiovascular death and all-causes mortality. Now, I've been saying that for decades, and here's what I've said. I've said that the higher your heart rate, the shorter the life of the heart, because there's a biological clock in every single group of major organs in our body, the brain, the eyes. So you may have another system of the body that's working fine. With Alzheimer's and dementia, we frequently see that. You look at the person, they look okay. They're able to function, at least physically. It's just that their brain has been prematurely aged with all that amyloid plaque, and as a result, their brain cannot communicate the way it normally would. And so the brain is not the same age biologically as the rest of the body. Well, the heart is no different. So when we do not exercise, the heart rate goes up, let's say 80 beats per minute. When you're exercising regularly, I'm not talking about not marathon training, I'm just 3 miles a day, how about that, 6 days a week, 18 to 20 miles a week. That can bring your heart rate down into the 60s. That's a terrific thing. Now, that's even without the nutrients we know can also prolong your heart and prevent heart attack and stroke, like cayenne pepper at 50,000 heat units, one capsule 3 times a day, magnesium from citrate, you know, 800 milligrams twice a day, and L-carnitine at 1,000, 2,000 milligrams a day, and hawthorn at 100 milligrams, and coenzyme Q10, ubiquinol at 100 milligrams 3 times a day. Those things are known, proven, to help your heart. But the omega-3 fatty acids come in there and are even more powerful. So you want to turn off the inflammation in the heart. You want to lower your heart rate. Omega-3 does that. Now, by lowering your heart rate from a resting pulse of, let's say, I'm going to guess most people in this audience around 75. If you lowered it down to 65, you've probably added in the neighborhood of 10 years onto your heart lifespan and your body's lifespan and reduced the chance of death from those. So, again, the science for good nutrition is there. And also, sleeping for longer, meaning getting your sleep completely, leads to a healthier diet. This is from King's College in London, and they're saying that getting your full 8 hours of sleep per night is a simple lifestyle intervention that could help reduce intake of sugary foods and leads to a generally healthier diet. Now, sleep is a modifiable risk factor for various conditions, including obesity and cardiometabolic diseases like diabetes. And this randomized controlled trial, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, looked at the feasibility of increasing sleep, because most people are getting to bed too late. They're waking up to go to the bathroom many times, all that breaks your sleep cycle. It's not good. You want to get a full night's sleep and go to bed and stay abed. So don't have any liquid within 3 hours going to bed. That'll help. 1 milligram of melatonin, that'll help. L-theanine, 200 milligrams, about 2 hours before you go to bed, along with magnesium at 800 milligrams, that'll help. And turn off all lights around you. Put earplugs in if there's noise. And make sure you don't have any cell phones or laptops or anything within 10 feet of the body. That will also help. And finally, we have something new. And this audience always likes to be at the cutting edge. Write this down. COP, C-O-P, ABIA, A-I-B-A, COPABIA. That's an essential oil. Well, the new research out of the Natural Blaze shows that it's better than hemp oil. And it's been an essential oil. It's harvested from the Brazilian Amazon by tapping into a tree, much like extracting maple syrup. And while many Americans are pronouncing Copiaba, the Brazilian pronunciation is Copaiba. So you can hear it either way. It's fine. And it's got all these essential nutrients in it. And for whatever, generally it's 1 to 2 drops about every 4 hours. And it can help a lot of different conditions. I'm going to, and you can actually dilute it with coconut oil. And the two taken together are very good. And it's you safely on the skin when you mix it with the Cariora like coconut oil. And you don't take it internally. It's for the skin, for all kinds of skin conditions. So that's something new. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you, and I want to give you just one program announcement. Not this Sunday, but the following Sunday at 7:30 p.m., I'm going to hold my newest webinar, and it'll be a unique webinar because I'm having 5 or 6 of the greatest scientists on the planet. In fact, we'll be going to different countries during the webinar. It'll start with a showing of the new documentary, which is about an hour and 44 minutes long, really powerful documentary called Deadly Deception. Then we're going to talk with people who are going to share stuff you did not know. You have not heard these people before. They are really good. For example, Dr. James Lyons Weller. I mean, he did over 100 major experiments in molecular mimicry, the unseen risk of vaccines, down at the University of Pennsylvania. He's a major scientist. He's been credited with doing a lot of original molecular biology work. He's going to be there talking about why you can't trust the CDC. I mean, you'll hear him say, I do not trust anything the CDC does, because they follow policy, not science. They try to bring in the science that supports their policy, meaning they have a predetermined truth, they put it out, and then they run around trying to find corrupt science that will support it, instead of looking for the real science, because the real science would show you there is no such thing as a safe vaccine. It doesn't exist. So we're going to have experts from around the world, from New Zealand and Australia and Ireland and France, and who are going to give you the insights. You don't know these people. You've never seen or heard of them. These are the smartest people on the planet, but they're also completely honest about what they see in vaccines. So for people of all ages, you won't want to miss this webinar. It is really serious. You can go to prn.fm for more information, or garynall.com. Either way, all of my webinars are always packed. In fact, we have thousands of people who didn't get in on time, and wait at the last moment. Don't, because this is a biggie. It's hard hitting. In fact, there's a trailer up on my website now that you can see it. And I had a little sneak preview private showing in New York, and yet hear the people's statements about what they felt of the film when they were leaving. We had all walks of life there. Professors from John Jay College and a judge, and all these people got up on stage and made a comment. Hear their comments. Everyone of all ages, everyone who's interested in social issues, everyone who cares about our health and not allowing the body to be turned over to the government to do with it what it wants, who respects freedom of choice. You won't want to miss this one time only, one night, a webinar, and it's going to be heard all over the world. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Now, that said, all of us, at least all the people I know, support the idea that there should be no harassment of people, not just celebrities. And that's my first contention, is that why is it that it's only when a Harvey Weinstein or a Bill Clinton are called out as rapists and sexual predators, one pup punished, the other not? That shows the contradictions in our sense of propriety. When one is aligned with the Democrat and liberal community, both were actually, but one was deemed, okay, you we will deal with, the other one, we won't deal with you. I just think that the hypocrisy is palpable, and that's why a lot of people don't support the Democratic corporatist neoliberal agenda. They've become progressive or independent. They want nothing to do with them. They see the corruption. But also, it begs the larger question. Every single day in the United States, every few minutes in the United States, someone is being insulted, assaulted, attacked, in some way marginalized through bigotry or racism or sexual predation. But because it's happening to people who are not famous, in relationships with domestic abuse or in a corporate environment or in a office politics, we don't address it. Even the biggest, one of the biggest ones, is in the military-industrial complex. I had a woman on the show, a general, talking about her testimony before a congressional hearing about the tens of thousands of sexual attacks, men and women both being attacked and raped, and nothing done about it. And even after all that testimony, nothing was done about it. It didn't stop. So it's in the culture itself. When we do not see someone as sacred, we do not see someone as a viable human force where we should deal with them in a moral and ethical and sensitive manner. Now, you can have your sense of humor, you can mock sex, you can laugh at sex, fine. You can say something's funny or not funny, that's fine. You have the freedom to say what you want, but you do not have the right to in any way impose your sexual needs upon another person unless it's consensual. So why haven't we dealt with this until now? And would we have even made it into the news if it had not been for the fact that these were celebrities? And it, to me, it bespeaks a duplicitous agenda when people can say, we didn't know. I have two advantages in this. One is that I published two major best-selling books on Hollywood. Black Hollywood, The History of the African American in Films, in 1972, and Part 2 in 1992. I also had a film of mine, optioned by MGM, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and the president of the studio wanted to work with me on it. And I said, fine, Jack Haley Jr. His father was Jack Haley Sr., who was in The Wizard of Oz, The Tin Man. So we worked. And I wanted to have an African-American director for each decade. And he said, that's cool. So, you know, I got Godfrey Cambridge in, and we were going to have Sidney Poitier and all these different people going clear back, including the black Valentino, Lorenzo Tucker, talking about the black independent film. Anyhow, that's a side story. But I worked on this for a long time. But I had a chance, when you're working and I was the screenwriter on the film. When you're working with someone who runs a studio, he's not just an employee who runs, he's the president of MGM, you have a chance to get to hear a lot of stuff and see what's going on. He was also married to Liza Minnelli at the time. And then a friend of mine was one of the biggest backers. He was one of the silent backers. He's the one that people went to because he put money into film. Got a percentage right off the top, and he would select the scripts, etc. And another friend of mine who used to work for me, in fact, I hired him away from Esquire magazine in the public relations department to help with what I was doing on social issues back in the late 1960s. He went on to run one of the biggest, if not the biggest, known the biggest public relations firm in Hollywood for 40 years. He just sold it about 7 years ago. So you get this, you get an insider seat when you can, on any given night when I was in Hollywood, see what was going on. And there are no secrets in Hollywood. And the two biggest sexual predators, the two biggest names, have not come out yet. I'm curious to see how long it will take before someone outs them. They're both men, and they both engaged in having lots of sex at sex parties with younger men. But they are powerful. Their names are on buildings. And so let's see what it takes to bring them out so they had their Harvey moment. This, again, is part of the absolute hypocrisy of how we deal with an issue. For those who say, I didn't know, I do not believe them for a heartbeat, not a second, because I know how that entire culture goes out there. So we have yet to understand the real lessons to be learned outside of just when something happens, reporting it. There's a really deep ingrained culture of if you're famous, if you're Franco, who's now had five people come out against him for sexual abuse, well, what happens to all the other famous people? Or have they not had their day yet to be exposed? So when people say, yeah, I work with Harvey for 30 years, I did 12 films for Harvey, but you mean he did these things? Nonsense. Absolute rubbish. Everyone knows everything about everyone in a town that is filled with such narcissists, insecure, megalomaniacs, and half their day is spent not reading scripts, but in gossip. But I will continue that. More importantly, it's the person who made this. And that doesn't also say something about the Golden Globes where let's wear black dresses to show our support for the... But then it was no longer about wearing a plain black dress, maybe one that you could get at a Goodwill shop to show that you were coming from a more, you know, humble suffragette position, but instead a $10,000 designer black dress. So then it was how much did you pay for your black dress, and how sexy is the black dress, and how original is the black dress. The entire idea that celebrity shouldn't be the one leading any of these causes. There's some good celebrities. Martin Sheen, a good celebrity, and Sean Penn, and Ed Begley Jr., there are lots of them that not only believe in a cause, and Mark, what is his name, Ruffalo, they not only believe in it, they commit themselves and are willing to take the heat for supporting an important social or human rights issue. Them, I support, but the vast majority, no, dunderheads. So along comes Oprah. And here's my contention, as well as that of Mike Whitney from Counterpunch. It's fine for her to have her views on this, but then there's a whole lot of her being connected with Harvey in introducing a lot of young starlets to Harvey. Are we to believe that she knew nothing of his reputation, nothing of all the statements have been made by countless people who've been in touch with Harvey? Is that what we're supposed to believe? And then everyone says, Oprah for president. Okay, fine, Oprah for president. Hold on a second. Now, we have one famous reality star as president. What other qualifications do you have? For example, are you the same Oprah Winfrey that allowed your foreign to be used as a platform to promote the war in Iraq? Did I miss something when I was looking at those clips of George Bush? unchallenged on your show promoting the war in Iraq? Have you gone to Iraq? Did you apologize for being a propagandist? Charming? Yes. Beautiful manners on television? Absolutely. Top. Neoliberal? Globalist? Absolutely. Are you one of the 100th of 1% with Bill Gates and the others? Same class. Wow. So what exactly have you gone to bat for, where you've actually put your reputation on the line? Let me just go through some things. Let's do a checkoff. Did you ever ask for the reform of the USDA and to create a national food program so no American goes hungry? No. Did you ask for the restoration of the Glass-Steagall Act? No. Did you support Bill and Hillary Clinton? Yes, yes. Barack Obama? Yes, yes. Did you ever criticize Barack Obama, who won the Nobel Peace Prize and then invaded and caused wars in seven countries where over 65,000 bombs were dropped in those countries per year? No. Did you ask for a ban on trading in commodities necessary for life, like on water or food? No. Did you support the large corporate contracts like the TPP and the NAFTA? Yes. Did you want to repeal Bush's bankruptcy law? No. Did you want to reform the Fed or rein in the banks? Did you want to close down military bases or stop regime change? Did you want to stop spying by the National Security Agency or the deep state? Did you want to return the airwaves to the people? Did you want universal health care? Did you want the degradation of the environment with gas, hydrofracking, and oil, nuclear to close them down? Did you take your massive audience of 24 million people, did you take them in front of Congress and says, close down the pipeline? No. Did you take any of your billions, I guess around $3 billion more or less, did you take any of that money and go out and buy sleeping bags or food for the people who are sending up the XL pipeline? No. Did you support the Native American movement there that was trying to get the federal government out of their sacred burial grounds? No. Did you challenge the mental health field that keeps people on artificial diagnosis and gives them drugs? No. What have you personally done in financing or supporting renewable energies? Did you stop home foreclosures? Did you take your mighty weight of influence and respected by your audience, loved by your audience? Did you take that same audience and say, let's have a national day of mourning for all people who have lost their homes, 7 million homes, 4 people, 28 million Americans, and let's ask Congress, demand Congress, stop foreclosing homes immediately? And did you do that in front of the White House, in front of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's White House? Did you do that? Did you jeopardize your friendship? Did you put anything on the line for the American people, including black people? No. Did you say stop bailing out Wall Street? Did you say stop banning, let's ban credit card default swaps and derivatives? Did you advocate for a flat tax? Did you say stop our nuclear program? Did you say stop spying on every American? Did you say stop militarizing the police and criminalizing poverty? Did you say let us forgive the student debt? Did you say stop asset forfeiture? Did you go into any of the cities in America and de-ghettoize them? You had the resources to do so. Did you ask for more support for small businesses? Did you demand rebuilding of our infrastructures? Did you address the environmental degradation and global warming? Did you say enough ghettoizing of American cities? We had the resources, but inappropriately proportioned, so we no longer have to have a ghettoized city in America. Did you challenge with your audience Citizens United and term limits? Did you demand taking money out of politics? Did you support Jill Stein or at least another party, an independent party, a Democratic party, but not the Democratic Party, but another democracy party, a freedom party? No. Did you ask to take the profit out of our medical health care system? Did you challenge the power of lobbyists? Did you expose Alex, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and tens of thousands of laws passed in the states by Alex and their state legislators? Did you say the toxic Superfund sites need to be cleaned up? Did you promote sustainable organic agriculture? Did you challenge the massive mergers and monopolies? Did you go to the defense and put your personal money into helping protect the 36 whistleblowers that the government was attacking under Barack Obama? You had no trouble popularizing Barack Obama, helping him get elected. Did you ever write an editorial about what he had done that disappointed you? Did you challenge corporate charters? Did you promote the Citizens Oversight and Advocacy Boards in every community in America? Did you demand the closure of all debtors' prisons? Did you protest outside of a debtor's prison, not just for a photo op, but stay there all day, every day, for a month with your audience? Did you demand a raising the minimum wage to a living wage? Did you say that all drugs should be legalized and establish treatment and counseling centers in every community in America to help those who are addicted and suffering? Every nonviolent drug-related prisoner should have their records expunged. Did you advocate for them getting out of jail? Did you demand and demonstrate in front of the White House and Congress stopping all sales of weaponry to all the other countries engaged in the support of terrorism, like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Israel? You have been a strong, staunch supporter of Israel. Did you ever visit the Palestinian people? Did you ever visit or choose to visit the people of Yemen? When was the last time you were in Haiti in the ghettos? Not in the hotel, in the ghettos. When was the last time you spent a night in a ghetto and ate the food that the people there have to eat and wash with the water they wash with? Have you? No? Did you ask for a creation of a Truth and Reconciliation Court for every state and federal employee, past and present, to come forward and confess their crimes and give them clemency or charge them? What about supporting American-made products and penalizing all offshoring and everything that could have been previously made in America? And when did you challenge those people on Wall Street who were making money off money and not by ever creating new businesses? Did you ban or protest to ban privatization of water? How about stopping all mining and exploration of resources on national and state parks and Native American lands and honoring the Native American treaties? How about forgiving all credit card debt or interest above 1%? How about closing down all payday loan centers and forgiving their debt? Some of those payday loan centers were in Chicago, where at the time you lived. Now your home has been affected like all the other homes, which is unfortunate, in California. I don't like to see that. But when did you stand up and protest against the overdevelopment, including your own overdevelopment area, where you made the environment susceptible to mudslides and fires? Wouldn't it have been nice if you had led a movement, a real environmental movement in California, to start educating the population why it must find other places to live because it's not sustainable? Those are just some of the ideas that I have on this. And I see my guest is standing by. I'm going to share tomorrow Mike Whitney's ideas. But now we're going to go to our guest, who is standing by, and he is Dr. Ken Berry. And Ken Berry is an activist attorney. He's a constitutional attorney. He cares deeply about our freedom of choice. He is a former federal attorney in civil law and currently the co-president of the Elizabeth Burt Center for Autism Law and Advocacy, and the president of First Freedoms, Inc., a nonprofit dedicated to advancing freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution's First Amendment. And earlier, he was the president of Jeannie McCarthy's organization, Generation Rescue. And he has three sons, one with autism. He's also the author of Vaccine Whistleblower, Exposing Autism's Research Fraud at the CDC, with a preface from Boyd Haley, who's been on this program, and Bob Kennedy, Jr. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
Ken, you're filing a complaint against the Italian government for ruling on vaccine mandates. And we also have this problem in California now, and their efforts to push mandatory vaccination in other states and even at the federal level. These rulings, you rightly observe, are in violation of the Universal Declaration on Bioethics and Human Rights, which has 193 countries signed on to it. Even Italy signed it. And this becomes a heated debate between vaccine safety versus vaccine harm and injury, and therefore a question of freedom of choice. It's a debate within the science community, and there's a great deal of scientific denialism in the advocates of mandatory vaccine and even criminal charges against parents who do not vaccinate their children. Even Mother Jones, who I don't read anymore because of how biased it is, has an article just right now in there about attacking the parents who choose through their education and their scholarship not to vaccinate it. Somehow they're cultists. Take us on this journey of what's happening in Italy and what we should do to respect the Universal Declaration. The forum is yours.
Thank you. What happened in Italy is that they passed a law last June that mandated, I believe it's 10 or 11 vaccines to attend school for children there. France actually passed a similar law that takes effect now for 2018, so the next complaint I'll be filing is against France. But the human rights standard is pretty clear, as you said. In the Universal Declaration, it talks about consent, and it's any preventative medical intervention. Vaccination is obviously a preventative medical intervention. And consent for that can be withdrawn at any time for any reason without disadvantage or prejudice. There's no wiggle room in those words. Those words are clear as day. And restricting a child from public education or daycare is clearly a prejudice and a disadvantage. So what is happening is legislators are, I believe they don't understand what the standard is. They think they're doing something that's ethical when it's a direct 180 degrees unethical. It's violating the standard. And we need to educate legislators about that. And you mentioned California, the same thing. What happened in California, that was 2015, that's 40 million people in California. So the pharmaceutical industry took down a market of 40 million people. There's 60 million people in Italy. They took down a market of 60. There's 65 million people in France. So in each of those jurisdictions, hundreds of thousands of parents came out and protested it. But the industry lobby was able to convince the, rather than convince, they were able to obscure the bioethics and human rights issues. And I think that we need to argue the people who believe in this, that parents should choose versus the state, need to be arguing more about human rights and bioethics than about science. Because obviously there's always going to be a disagreement in science. This consensus is extremely rare. So when there's a disagreement, you fall back on your principles. And the principles here say consent. And that it's up to the individual. And that's the Article 3. And it's, again, very clear. It couldn't be a more clear statement. The interests and welfare of the individual should have priority over the sole interest of science or society. The individual takes precedence over the state. That's the principle. So if people have, or if there's a debate whether to vaccinate or not, the individual should decide, not the state.
Good. Does the Italian case serve as a precedent that we might likely see implemented in the U.S. and other countries? And are the larger international health agencies like the World Health Organization involved promoting mandatory vaccination in developed countries?
They are. They're all about promotion. They don't talk about the ethics of it at all, which is unfortunate. And I think, to my knowledge, this is the first complaint of its kind. There's a panel in Paris that under UNESCO, the United Nations Educational Service, that's supposed to, the idea is any individual can file a human rights complaint. So I'm in the United States, so I can say I I'm witnessing a human rights violation in Italy. I'm complaining to this body in Paris, and theoretically they're going to bring the Italian government in and they'll try to mediate between me and other parents what the situation, what the solution could be. So it's their move at this point. The complaint itself is available on the website. That's firstfreedoms.org. And it's only 4 pages long. It's very direct. You know, to me, it's a crystal clear violation of bioethics and human rights. But the problem is, there's no enforcement procedure for UN declarations. They're very important, but there's no way to force a government to adhere to their agreement.
Are you familiar with J.B. Hanley's new article on the new aluminum studies finding high levels of aluminum in the brains of autistic children who have died, including a new chart that Dr. Sherry Tenpenny put out showing this?
Yes. Hello?
Oh, you are. Okay, good. Now, for all of us who tried to lobby against the efforts in California, but the citizens did not want mandatory vaccines, but the legislature did, and they won the day. What can you say about what we now know was behind the massive push in California?
Well, it was certainly a one-party issue. It was the Democratic Party had the governorship, the state. They had the state assembly. They had the state senate. So pretty much it seemed like the politicians did not listen to the people at all, because it is a minority view, the people who don't fully vaccinate. It's a growing view, but it's not a majority view. And I think politicians who are concerned about re-election just look at what's the majority opinion, and it's, might this cost me donor dollars? So they didn't want to anger the pharmaceutical industry. They look at it and say 80% of the people fully vaccinated, whatever the number is, and they took the easy way rather than looking at what the ethics are. So and this is the people who don't fully vaccinate. It's a minority view, and in our system, minorities get rights. So I think we should be pushing the rights issue more than the science. Another way to look, and the science, they're both important, right? But at some point, there's going to be a disagreement. I think on this issue, there's almost the people who are true believers in vaccination and the people who think their vaccine risks are too high. The idea that they're ever going to come to agreement is practically zero on their world views. So if they're in conflict, what's going to happen? Who prevails, the parent or the state? I believe firmly that it's the parent. Industry believes it's the state, because they're getting captive markets. They're taking markets down by the millions at a time. And like, to me, it's like the old Martin Niemöller quote of, like, first they came for the trade unionists, and they came for the communists. First they came for the Californians. Now they're the Italians, the French. So that if people around the globe don't think the industry is coming for them, if you think in your state they're not coming to take away your exemptions and impose vaccine mandates on you, you're wrong. They're coming for you.
And once they get it mandated in all 50 states for the children, watch next their efforts for adults. That's coming also.
I think that's right. And access to public school is extraordinarily important. So to use that to coerce a parental choice is not right. And I think if they're coming for adults, like, what do adults really need from the government? Would be something like driver's licenses. They might tie in a mandate. If you're going to renew your driver's license, you need to have a certain set of vaccines done. So the industry is going to keep coming for people, and we need to push back.
Finally, in light of the corruption at the CDC and Dr. William Thompson scandal being the most flagrant criminal cover-up of vaccine damage in the MMR association with autism, how much faith and credibility can we give to our federal agencies any longer for preserving and protecting the health of American children and the greater population?
Not much, but I think all of that is part of the information that goes to form informed consent. So you have to weigh the sources of the information. You have to weigh that the biases. The CDC obviously is trying to push the highest rates they possibly can. So they're minimizing potential risk because they want the rates to be as high as possible. So I would say their credibility is very low, but that's what parents and individuals should use in their calculation about informed consent while they're figuring out what it is they want to do.
I appreciate you coming on, Kevin, and sharing this with us. Kevin, your book is called Vaccine Whistleblower, Exposing Autism Research Fraud at the CDC. The website is ebcala.org, ebcala.org. I look forward to another conversation. Please keep up the good fight on behalf of all of us who believe in freedom of choice.
Thank you. And the complaint is at firstfreedoms.org. Thank you.
Okay. Kevin Barry, B-A-R-R-Y. I'm Gary Noll. That's the end of the program. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. And don't forget, go over to sign up for the webinar on vaccines with scientists you have never heard before. We have found the best of the best scientists in the world with outstanding, impeccable scientific credentials who've done original research on vaccines. They're not pundits. They're not ideologists. These are real people. And they're going to be on that webinar, not this Sunday, but following Sunday night, starting at 7:30, with a premiere of Deadly Deception. Have a nice day, everyone.